Nalu FM Finance Podcast. Insight into the financial markets.
It happens, okay, not frequently, but sometimes often enough that somebody makes a mistake. People lose millions of dollars because they have to unwind the trade.
This podcast is powered by Vesta, the engine behind active management. Vesta is a Switzerland-based fintech startup that provides software for issuers of actively managed certificates to automate their value chain fully. Visit Vesta, V-E-S-T-R.com, to schedule a meeting with an expert and to learn more about Vesta.
I'm here with Ben So, co-founder and managing director of Stax. Stax is a Singapore-based fintech development firm focusing on capital markets industry. Stax stands for securities trading, asset clearing and settlement. That's a bit of a mouthful. A blockchain infrastructure specifically for finance. Thank you, Ben, for giving
Thanks,
me the
Stefan.
Chance to talk to you.
It's good to have you here.
Thank you. I'm very glad that I made it. Who are your clients and how do you help them?
So our clients are financial institutions, you know, in other words, banks, asset managers, exchanges, and we want to be able to help them because we want to help the financial industry in general, whereby we think that the financial industry requires more digitalization, requires more innovation, and that's where we want to provide some technology support for them.
Okay. And one of the things, I mean, I saw, which I want to talk a little bit more about it, you successfully completed a proof of concept to deploy an open architecture bond in a box platform through distributed ledger technology. So is it okay also to call it tokenized bond? Would that be a fair thing to call it as
that
well?
It is a fair thing. Okay. Because if you look in the bond in the box, if you open up the box, what's inside the box is a series of smart contracts running on a distributed ledger with interoperability of integrations to certain other infrastructure systems.
Okay. I'm a big fan. I've seen this now done also in Switzerland. But I often get asked this, what is actually the advantage of doing a tokenized issue? I mean, so far we do, you know, we get a PDF for the pricing supplement. Why is that not good enough anymore?
Well, that is possible. You know, people get by with this for the longest time, right? The financial markets, I believe, has been running the same way as it has been for the last 50 years. Yeah, incidentally, it's older than me. But in any case, we do feel that it could be better because actually while the financial system gets by, it's almost like a patchwork of multiple armies or back office people plugging the holes in between. So you talk about confirmations, affirmations, PDFs, emails, you know, phone calls, messaging. These are all a series
When you change and strike price, it has to go communicate to Euroclear and other places. That's the challenge.
Exactly. These are all areas where there's human intervention. And it happens, okay, not frequently, but sometimes often enough that somebody makes a mistake.
Yeah.
People lose millions of dollars because they have to unwind the trade.
And how do you avoid, in this case, that there are no mistakes are made? Can I not
claim? Glad you asked that. Because if we are able to tokenize the product, right, that's where we build in programmability. Mm-hmm. When these financial products takes on a life of its own because it's been pre-programmed by a certain computer program, in this case, smart contracts, where it is governing the life cycle of these products. You know, a bond has a payment, you know, interest payments, okay, and also a redemption, a maturity, or maybe corporate notices. And all of those could be programmed to execute when conditions are met.
Okay, and basically code becomes law.
Not in the legal sense, but yes.
Yeah, but the question is then for me, what happens when there is a dispute? Normally you go to the courts. What happens when you have a smart contract?
So which is why the code needs to reflect the law. Yep, it's not necessary law today, you know, because that's where lawyers still need to get paid, right? But the more important thing is that the codes need to reflect what the representation or what the liabilities are.
In the case that you did, can you tell me a little bit, what was the bond? Was it just a plain vanilla fixed income or was it linked to other assets like in the crypto side or?
So it was actually a POC, Okay, and that's where we were allowed to experiment with many types of bonds, simulating actual bonds, right? So that's where we were able to look at, for example, vanilla bonds, mm-hmm. corporate bonds, and interestingly, sustainability-linked bonds. Yeah, okay. So that's where we were able to provide some form of programming, okay, for different types of conditions. And in the case of sustainability link or green bonds, okay, green bonds have a certain use of proceeds, sustainability link bonds have a KPI tag to the product. And that's where we were able to innovate using some form of programmability to enforce the contracts. Mm.
In traditional bonds, let's call them traditional, you take credit risk of the issuer. How is it in a tokenized bond? You're still having credit risk to the person who promised you to pay the money, or where is there some other mechanism?
It would be the same, except that it is entirely enforceable, you know, because I have been in unfortunate circumstances where the bond, you know, as a bond investor, the bond issuer actually defaulted, and then it's really unclear what's next.
Right. Yes, how to.
Exactly. So, you know, then it entered into a very long process, judicial process. And even till today, I mean, it's quite obvious that the bond that I invested in is something linked to China. Okay, so it has been actually more than a year already, and nothing has happened as of now. So whereas a programmable bond or tokenized bond, all right, would be able to execute certain types of actions immediately, as long as the certain assets have been bundled together.
Yeah, excellent. Now you mentioned also there's, you put green bonds, I think that's what you called it. How did you incorporate these requirements into that kind of tokenized bond? How did you?
Yeah.
The rules that it had to be certain things, that it checks and for that they fulfilled certain requirements. Is it only initially or also ongoing?
Great question. So I think there are two types of green bonds here, right? The true green bond will enforce that the use of proceeds must be for green purposes. It could be for solar power, renewable energy, etc. So that's where, you know, it is really written within the documents and of course within the smart contract, okay, that the proceeds will be used for this certain use of proceeds. And hence, we as in the entire capital markets, will be able to monitor it. That's a one-time process. The second type of bond would be an ongoing process whereby it is tracking the KPIs of the issuer. Whereby the issuer, in this case, will have to set a target. It could be an annual target. It could be a 3 years target. Okay, where they are hitting a sustainability link target and getting rewarded for a lower bond payment.
I see. And is that still enforced by a human or checked by a human at one point, in a sense?
So ultimately, the program can execute everything, but until today's implementation, we still expect to have a human just to supervise it, you know, because we are still in the transition phase, I would say, today.
Makes sense. Now, what was sort of the biggest challenge in this project that you and your team had to solve?
I guess it's the interoperability with legacy infrastructure, which is also the same reason why a lot of these projects hasn't really taken off at scale. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess the most important thing here is that we do need some form of partnerships, okay, multiple partnerships, okay, with different types of providers, whereby the existing infrastructure still needs to be used for certain types of activities, okay, and that's where the handoff or integration to the DLT needs to be secured, okay, and that's where we come in to try to smoothen these integrations between different systems or different counterparties.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that always is fun in games, even in traditional bond issuance process, is the anti-money laundering and KYC process. How does it work when you have sort of a theoretically a tokenized bond where I can push it from my wallet to your wallet?
So I guess it's still a matter of implementation here. You know, with what we have been involved in, it was always with licensed financial services providers, licensed financial institutions.
You use their process.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In other words, you can't publicly, you know, use the public cryptocurrencies to purchase these bonds on the blockchain yourself. You still need to go through this portal where it would be a financial services provider.
I see. I mean, when you have such a distributed ledger technology, there's no really need for we can transact between each other. There's no real need anymore for an exchange, a central place where something is listed.
Yeah.
But exchanges have one huge advantage. They determine a price and provide potential liquidity.
Yeah.
How do you envision something like this work for a tokenized bond?
I mean, we already see some elements of this today. right? There is already a parallel market, if you may, okay, in the tokenized world or in the DeFi or crypto space.
Yep.
And I'm excited for them, actually, because I think it represents a democratic finance for everybody. Okay, but of course, the type of liquidity will be different, right? You know, when you talk about institutional liquidity in the financial sector, and you talk about retail liquidity in a democratic fashion, okay, you are talking about different types of products and different types of liquidity. And if you're talking about something like a tokenized bond, or let's just remove the word tokenized for a moment and talk about bonds. You know, these are typical products that are invested by fund managers, you know, pension funds, okay, large institutions. And the challenge therefore is, you know, because these companies or organizations tend to have traditional infrastructure and will not be able to quickly adopt the truly democratic fashion. Mm-hmm. Okay, we do need some form of traditional infrastructure to help organize this.
Okay. Now, I know, for example, in Switzerland, the DLT is already has been adopted into law. Yeah. How is it in Asia? Are there certain regions further ahead versus others? And what are your hopes, in a sense, what will happen there?
Yeah, so what Switzerland is doing is really groundbreaking and really exciting too. Yeah. So in Singapore, at least, okay, DLT is still not the legal ledger on record. Okay, we still need to have the securities registered in the traditional depository. Yeah, but DLT is still being allowed to be used as long as we do not contravene this, which means that, okay, there's really a variety of DLT-based exchanges in Singapore, licensed, regulated, which means that, you know, the depository keeps its role as the depository, and the DLT exchanges will actually serve as the downstream, okay, or additional participant whereby they are performing innovation at the market transaction level.
And in when you did this project, was there one thing that came out of it that you didn't expect actually to find? You didn't think there was an application for this or anything that you didn't expect?
I just felt that one interesting byproduct, okay, of this POC was that we were therefore able to really digitalize many elements, okay, of the financial processes that were not yet available today. For example, if there was a middleman, okay, or if there was a multiple intermediaries in between the buyer and the seller,
yeah,
right? Typically, we are just using omnibus accounts, right? I have a account in the broker who purchases the bond through a distributor, which is a large bank, okay, from the custodian of the selling agent, right? So, and what shows up in the records is actually a private bank client has bought the bond. Mm-hmm. That's all. Right, and it doesn't say it's one single private bank client that bought the bond. It says the private bank has an allocation of how many bonds. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what we realized that, you know, on the ledger, we are technologically able to really provide for individual addresses to have these tokens in their individual address wallets.
You break it down much more to the individual.
There is this technical possibility, and it's happening seamlessly. You know, it's not endangering the risk of settlement. Yeah, it's not endangering the loss of liquidity. It's actually still allowing the liquidity to be put for the transaction to still continue. So that's quite interesting for me. It also means that we could really democratize or provide some form of identity use cases for every single person or entity.
I see. Yeah. Now, if somebody's interested and would like to procure help on some project like this, what's the best way to contact you?
So I'm very active on LinkedIn.
Okay, good.
And I reply to all my emails at least, you know, within the day. Yeah. Okay, so please email me, LinkedIn me. You definitely find me quite readily online.
Okay. And that's now the last question, which I always ask everybody. Just one warning here is, what are you up to? Three favorite finance movies.
Three finance movies, right? So
usually shows your age.
You're absolutely right. I'm trying to think of the ones that are a bit newer. But I did like The Big Short.
Yep.
Yep, because I think it's based on a real story, and it also reflects the contrarian view that gets rewarded.
Yeah.
Okay, and also the challenges of having a contrarian view in a traditional, very traditional world.
That is where a lot of money is going one way, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and don't scold me for this, but I did like The Wolf of Wall Street, not because I want to be one.
No, it was very entertaining.
Yeah, it was very entertaining, but it also shows the other side, you know, which is the excesses, yeah, the excesses, and of course, maybe it might not be happening anytime anymore. Okay, but the way that, you know, somebody can just perpetrate a fraud just because of a outlandish and a confident appearance, which also means that, you know, we probably need to look beyond appearances.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Yes, absolutely. Great. Thank you, Ben. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you.
Nalu FM Finance Podcast. Insight into the financial markets.
This podcast is powered by Vesta, the engine behind active management. Vesta is a Switzerland-based fintech startup that provides software for issuers of actively managed certificates to automate their value chain fully. Visit Vesta, VESTR.com, to schedule a meeting with an expert and to learn more about Vesta.